Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Inside Indy Sports Podcast. I'm Tyler James. I'm joined once again by the one and only Eric Hansen. Together, we cover Notre Dame football, recruiting, and more for InsideIndySports.com on the Rivals Network. May started with a bang for Notre Dame women's basketball. The Irish received transfer portal additions from a pair of all-conference forwards, Pittsburgh's Liatu King and Marquette's Liza Carlin. Then the Irish gained their first 2025 commitment from five-star forward Leah Macy. But the first big news of the offseason came in mid-April from today's guest when forward Maddie Westbeld announced that she'll be returning for her fifth season with the Irish. Maddie, who averaged 14.4 points and 8.7 rebounds last season, is about to become a Notre Dame graduate with a bachelor's degree in business administration. Maddie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm excited to chat.
Let's start there with your impending graduation. How does it feel to be so close to becoming a Notre Dame graduate?
Oh my gosh, it feels surreal. I got my undergrad in finance and then a minor in poverty studies. And so I'm like that whole time doing both, I was trying to figure out, you know, like what are my passions? How can I intertwine all three passions of mine, of basketball, of, you know, finance? I've been around it my whole life with my dad was always into finance, and then poverty studies. And so I'm trying to navigate all of that, and I'm really excited for this next year. I'm so grateful to obviously get the chance to graduate from Notre Dame, but also to come back and just kind of boost that into what could become. So I'm really, really excited.
So where I'm going to start is with Liatu King. I remember the Pittsburgh game, and I remember you getting bopped in the face at Pitt. Mm-hmm. Was that a result of Liatu's, or was that somebody else's body part that hit you in the face?
Yeah, I still got to bring that up to her. We still got to chat about that. But I think I got hit prior to that, and that kind of set it off. I think the nose, I broke my nose prior to that. And
oh, wow.
I think once something like that happens, you kind of just are a magnet to stuff. So, so yeah, that's kind of how that happened.
So you stayed in the game thinking that you had a broken nose?
I got hit in the Syracuse game, actually.
Okay.
The game before that. It was New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
That was the beginning of the Syracuse game was when I broke my nose and then played the rest of the game and then noticed the rest of the night it was pretty swollen in a lot of pain. So yeah.
Maddie, and so when Liatu visited, were you like her host, or did you have much interaction when she came in, having played against her and stuff?
Yeah, I think her and honestly with all of the other recruits, me and my teammates, me, Liv, Hannah, have really like tried to have a big impact in the transfer portal, because obviously coaches have a big impact in bringing them here and talking to them on phone calls and stuff. But I think listening to players and hearing what are our goals for this year, what are our visions, and kind of what page are we on, and how do we want you to be a part of it? We really try to do that with Liatu, with Liza, and with a couple others. And so I think that was really it. I wasn't her host, but we did have a couple really good conversations, just kind of pertaining to all of that, what her goals were, what our goals were.
Maddie, throughout your career at Notre Dame, you've seen transfers come in. How do you go about helping them get acclimating to Notre Dame and the program and everything that comes with joining this Irish team?
Yeah, I think kind of stepping into my role as a leader, I really want to make sure that this summer in particular, and obviously last summers in the past, that everybody is just on the same page before you get here. So I don't know whether that's texting the group chat or just texting individually, just letting them know that I'm here if you need anything at all. been here for about to be 5 years now, so I'm a little familiar with the space and with how everything goes. But yeah, in the past, just being a really opening individual, just allowing them to ask me anything, and you know, if they need anything, they know they can go to me.
I would like you to speak to the culture and let me set it up this way. Obviously in the Pitt game, you guys were down to where I think Nielle almost had to sneak into the game and pretend that she still had eligibility left. But now you're going to have lots of players. You're going to have lots of front court players. You're going to have lots of guards. And everybody really has to buy into your culture. You guys, of all the teams I've covered in any sport, I thought you guys felt like one of the most unselfish teams I've ever been around. And I'm wondering, how do you bring that to this next year's team, where that's going to have to be an incredible part of this for everybody to buy into the end goal and not worry about the minutes?
Yeah, I actually I kind of want to talk about like how we were able to do that in even this last season.
Sure.
I think it starts with breaking it down. It starts with the simple things, and everybody like tries to make it a big you can add a lot of pressure to it. You can say we have this much talent, so this is the outcome that we should get, especially next year. And you know, there's a whole lot of excitement about the talent on this on the team, and of course, but for right now, and even last season after the NC State game, it was more so not even from the coach's side of things, it was more so just from us. Like, what do we want? What are we representing on this team? How does that, like, what does that look like? What does a person playing for Notre Dame, what does that standard look like? And so it was really just us tightening up a few things and reminding ourselves like the pride that we have to play with getting to play for this university and getting to walk into Rolfs, the one of the nicest facilities in the country. Like, I think it's that gratitude factor, and just a lot more simple things go into it than just, oh, I'm really good at basketball. Give me the ball. Let me shoot it. You know? So for us, it's not the talent. It's making sure that we're on the same page. And so that's my focus for this summer, is to set the tone. And I think everybody is on that same page right now. Everybody is hungry for it. And it's gonna create a lot of narratives, and you know, that everybody's talking about Liv and Hannah and how they're gonna be able to play together. But everybody right now is really locked into one goal, and it's the habits that are going to get us there. So,
Maddie, what has it been like to be playing in women's basketball in this era where it feels like this sport is really gaining a lot of traction and popularity? Do you feel like that gives you a greater responsibility? What can you just sort of describe of like what you've seen in terms of the popularity of the sport during your time here at Notre Dame?
absolutely, it's an incredible time. My freshman year, it was during COVID, and we had no
Yeah.
people in the stands. And even watching my sister, it was like she went through so many obstacles, so many things to get to a national championship, and she did it without getting paid. So I have a kind of a feel for both perspectives. And right now, I was just talking to my sister yesterday. I'm kind of in this place of like, I feel guilty almost, but then I also am like, I need to take full advantage of this being in bearing the fruit of what my sister planted, and what Neil planted, and what, you know, Skylar planted, and everybody else before us. And so I'm very, very humble thinking about this, but I'm also very hungry thinking about the opportunities that it's created for me and for the people before me. I just think we have so many places to go still, and I think it's just the beginning for the women's game.
Maddie, I wanted to circle back to the opener last season when South Carolina kind of from start to finish dominated that game. And then yet you guys were able to pick yourselves up and become a really good team. And you were on a collision course with them again. You didn't quite get there. But I wondered how you, as one of the team leaders, came out of that South Carolina game. What was going through your mind? And why was this team able to pick up and do things like win an ACC championship and get to the Sweet 16 and so forth?
Yeah, it was finding our identity all year. Starting with that game, it was really an incredible opportunity for us to be thrown into the biggest fire that we could have done. And so to start the season off like that, we humbled ourselves from the very beginning. And, you know, that was really cool to be able to benchmark ourselves. Like we had worked really hard all off season, all preseason, and then to get to something like that. And then it's kind of like a humble slap in the face. Like this is where you need to tighten up. And it's unfortunate that it kind of gets hidden away in wins. Like what you need to work on doesn't really get exposed until you lose, but that's the best part about losing is it's just a lesson and in an opportunity to grow and to evaluate. And so I think throughout the year, it was like, well, we know there were glimpses of it, very great glimpses of it with UConn, with whatever games where we really, really showed out. So it was just, we saw our highs, we saw our lows.
Okay. And will this summer be finding a different identity just because there's different players on the team?
Yeah, it definitely will be finding out who we are, finding out a clear identity on the team. But I think the one thing that is going to be great and I'm so excited for is to continue that consistency. We figured that out after the NC State game, and we figured out how to, you know, even like Boston College, for example. We played at Boston College and we started out the game really, really poorly or really slow. And that was a trend for us throughout the season. We knew that if we started slow, it was going to just kind of drag on to the rest of the game. And after we won the game, we were all in the locker room. And of course we won by 20 or whatever it was. And we handled them pretty nicely, but in the locker room, all of us were just upset. Like, how do we fix this? Like, we're not going to get to where we want to go, and we're not going to be able to pick ourselves up out of this hole that we keep digging ourselves when we start games like this. And so it's just figuring things out. And again, it all goes back to the little things. So this summer is really just going to be about habits. How do we make ourselves the best version of ourselves so that when we get on the court, we can just focus on each other. We can just compete. We can really lock in and just kind of be present. I'm really excited about it.
Maddie, individually, where do you feel like you improved the most last season? And then going into the off season, what are you focusing on the most, or you want to make the biggest gains going into next season?
Yeah. I actually also just spoke about this. I think my biggest growth from previous years to last year was my level of trust for myself. And I think that's something that is learned, but I always thought I was a really disciplined person and I'm kind of focused and whatnot. But when I took a moment to really allow myself to trust me, I felt like that was the biggest change that I made for myself, whether it was finishing shots or, you know, just trusting myself to be disciplined. I think that's a main thing, and it kind of gets overlooked. And I don't know. It was focus for me also, just focusing on focus. That was a kind of something that I lacked, or that I heard that I lacked kind of all throughout my childhood, and just realizing like I can focus if I want to. And so it was just literally I would meditate and I would focus on focusing.
That's cool. A couple of the newcomers, we talked about Leah too, but we haven't talked about Liza or Kate. What do you know of their games? Do you know either one of them personally? Have you seen them play?
So Liza, she's from Marquette. I actually my all of my teammates were like, she's really, really good because she played at Notre Dame the game before us or after us when we played Ole Miss.
Right.
And everybody was like, she's really, really good. I never got a chance to watch her, but I'm really excited for what she brings. And she came on the visit and all of her questions were just business questions. You know, she didn't waste any time. It was just straight to the point. And it was like a breath of fresh air when a recruit comes in and they ask real questions, the hard questions. And so immediately I kind of built a trust factor with her and just a real confidence for the culture that she's going to bring with her and the experience and the leadership that she has. So I'm really excited about that. And then Kate, I'm not too familiar with her game, but I watched her a little bit, watched some of her highlights whenever she posts them on social media, and everybody around her says that she is a phenomenal player, and I'm really excited to be able to watch film and then get onto the court with her and get to work. She's a great kid. Every time she would come up to campus, it was like she was one of us. So I'm really excited to be able to work with her.
Maddie, this offseason's been pretty entertaining, I think, from a transfer portal perspective, where a lot of the big programs from last season seem to really be sort of building up and getting some more transfers in. How much have you paid attention to that? Is that hard to not get wrapped up in? What has been your perspective on that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of a crazy time right now with NIL, with everything else going on. The transfer portal is a big deal in that. And so I mean, it's a lot of noise. It's just a lot of noise everywhere. And I think I'm really grateful that my team stayed together and that we're going to be able to go out wholly, holistically, and the core is here. So I'm really, really grateful for that and want to stay focused in what we have and just stay locked into us.
Last one from me, Maddie. When you look at the way too early top 25s and the way too early bracketology, I mean, Notre Dame is on the number one seed line in there. You're anywhere from 2 to 4. So there's big expectations for this team. It felt like last year you guys had to fight for everything, and now everybody's telling you how wonderful you are. So how do you keep hungry when everybody has these high expectations?
Don't listen to anybody else's expectations. All of us have such a drive. I was literally just talking about this. Hannah is born hungry. Everybody sees it. She's a dog. Liv obviously is hungry for the comeback that she deserves. And that she is gonna get. Sonia, it's her last year, it's my last year. Everybody is on their own personal mission. And for us to put it together and kind of look at both of our individual yet team goals, the habits that we have leading up to that and the person that will be next to the accolades is much more than the accolades themselves. And for us to just focus on that, I think it takes all the pressure off of anybody else trying to set this standard and release these preseason expectations.
Maddie, before we let you go, I wanted to give you a chance to talk about your basketball clinic coming up next month. I understand you had one previously, so this will be the second edition. Can you explain what that was like hosting for the first time, and then what folks can do if they are interested in getting involved for the upcoming one in June?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for mentioning that. It was so exciting just being able to run my own camp last summer. I kind of threw it together with some friends and we had so much fun. We opened it up to, you know, we had 50 kids per session. It was elementary school all the way up until high school in three different sessions. And this year it'll be two different sessions broken up into the same age group of kids. But it'll be a 2 hour session per session, and we're gonna get some real work in. And I want to just kind of explain my journey of leadership and of just overall being an athlete, being a kid. And I'm really excited to just share that journey with them. And I think they'll get a lot of good quality skill exposure and all types of that. So I posted it on my social media and I have the link. I can share it with you guys to get signed up, get registered, but spots actually are filling fast. So if you guys are interested, anybody listening is interested, definitely get to that. So I'm so, so excited, but thank you guys for mentioning that.
Okay. Following up, is it in South Bend or is it in Dayton?
It's in Dayton. It's in Dayton. Okay. And then I am, stay tuned for one that will be running in South Bend for, I ran it with Notre Dame basketball. So it was men and women's, that I ran another one in December. So hopefully to do that one again. It was a free clinic, for South Bend kids. So stay tuned for another one of those, but yeah, this next one, June 7th, it's in Dayton. And yeah.
And any of your teammates, or is Catherine going to be there, your sister?
You know, I'm just discussing that. There could be a couple pop-ups into the story. Catherine tends to be on vacation during times like this, so we'll see if he makes it to Dayton. But, you know, yeah, you never know. We could not.
Well, I'm going to come and learn how to shoot threes.
Well, I think she should charge you extra for that, because that seems like that seems like a big task.
Do I actually have to have talent?
Oh my gosh. All right, Maddie. Well, we really appreciate you taking time to talk to us. And again, congratulations on getting your Notre Dame degree, and best of luck next season.
Thank you so much, you guys. Have a great one.
Thank you. Take care. So
before we get to our questions segment, I wanted to remind our listeners of our subscription promo for InsideIndySports.com. We're offering a 30-day free trial to our podcast listeners who want to try out a subscription to the site. That will get you access to all of our premium content, the Insider Lounge message board, and you don't have to wait for the next podcast to ask us a question. You can take advantage of this offer by using promo code NDPOD. That's NDPOD when you sign up for a subscription on InsideIndySports.com. You can also find a link to the deal in the podcast description or show notes. All right, now it's time for questions. You can submit questions to us on Twitter or the Insider Lounge message board before every podcast. I'm at TJamesND and Eric's at EHansonND. First one I have for us, Eric, is from Bob_Oxnard on the Insider Lounge. What position will Sonia Cintron play when Hannah Hidalgo and Olivia Miles are on the court? Do you think Cintron will flourish in that position?
I don't think her position slash role will change a lot. Andy will play three guards and sometimes four, as they did this past season. Sometimes they'll go big and just play two. But Olivia's going to slide into what Anna DeWolf's place in the lineup was doing. So again, you're going to have, instead of Anna, Hannah, and Sonia, you will have Olivia, Hannah, and Sonia. And those two will interchange. I think Olivia and Hannah will interchange some. There's some elements of being a small forward, but she really is a true two. And I think having more scoring options on the team next year is actually going to help her on the floor at times. It's going to be easier for her to find her shot, and it's going to make it more difficult to people to guard her without help. If you remember the UConn game, there were only three players that scored for Notre Dame in that game. Was Hannah, Sonia, and Maddie. So maybe on defense, she may not be on the top of the zone as much. She'd go up there when KK came into the game, and that was a really difficult matchup for teams. Given that Cass Prosper and some of these other players are going to be on the team, Olivia, I'm not, you know, and healthy, I'm not sure that we'll see that much, but I think her role is going to be pretty similar.
Yeah, I'm interested to see like her continue to grow in a role where she doesn't have to handle the ball as much. I think I think she has a chance to be an even better player off the ball than she is on the ball. I think I'm curious how that impacts her 3-point shooting. Can she get easier and better looks at three? Her 3-point shooting dropped last season from the previous season. She shot 40% in 2022-23 and then dropped to just below 36% last season. Is there like maybe more corner three opportunities? I think Notre Dame has struggled from three. I don't think that's been a strength for Notre Dame, the 3-point shooting, although they like to maybe shoot more than some people would like them to, but I think they have a chance to improve with that and get better looks with such good ball handlers with Hidalgo and Miles playing at the same time. So I think she has a chance to really help spread the offense a bit. And if those, if Maddie Westbeld and the new forward additions can really create a presence inside, I think the offense should be very versatile. And I think we've seen what Sonya can do as a defender. I think she'll continue to get a lot of responsibilities there. And certainly having other guards that can help could take a little bit of that pressure off her. All right, next question is from Mike D. Rochester on the Insider Lounge. Tyler and Eric, be sure to treat your mothers well this Sunday and every day. If the front four are the strength of A&M's defense, can Notre Dame counter that effectively with two tight end sets, or does that just let the linebackers and safeties come up tighter to support the defensive line? Do you think we'll see some design quarterback runs to slow down the A&M D-line?
I spoil my mom rotten every Mother's Day, and this one will be no different. I am so lucky to have her still. Yes, I think we'll see design quarterback runs against Texas A&M and everybody else as long as it's Riley Leonard is the quarterback and he's healthy. I even think if it's Steve Angeli, we'll see some of that, not as much as we would see with Riley Leonard. And I think it's something that helps unload a loaded box is having a quarterback that can run at the level of Riley Leonard. If there's a Mitch, you know, we still don't know what Notre Dame's offensive line is going to be like in late August. I mean, we're assuming that Texas A&M is going to have a big advantage there. You know, it's going to be interesting to me how much the offensive line closes the gap between now and August 31st. But if there is a mismatch up front, you can scheme around it. You can chip with a tight end or a running back. You can slide protections. You can max protect. I don't think you're going to do one specific thing and let Texas A&M kind of hone in on and figure out their counterpunch to that. I think you want to mix things up with how you help out your offensive line.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think two tight ends is the answer. I think you want to maybe try to spread them out and have less extra hats in the box. I will add, like, I don't – though I have concerns about Notre Dame's offensive line, run blocking isn't the higher of them. I think Notre Dame should be fine as run blockers. Even the struggles that we've seen from Charles Jagusaw and Tosh Baker, I don't think are as run blockers. It's more as pass protectors at the offensive tackle position. So I'm not terribly concerned about Notre Dame's ability to run the ball without two tight ends. And I definitely think Riley Leonard will be a part of that. Notre Dame wants to be able to use his legs. And that's a valuable asset that he brings to this offense. So I would imagine there will be some design runs to use against A&M. And like you said, throughout the rest of the season, as long as he's healthy. All right, next question from Marie Biafore at Biafore underscore Marie gave us a longer prompt here. On a scale of 1 to 10, what is the possibility of the following in 2024? And so let's take these one at a time, Eric. First one from Marie is Gerby Lambert is a starting tackle before the end of the season.
I put it as a 2. I could see him being a number 2 tackle at some point, although I thought Sullivan Abshire had a good camp and so forth. But barring injury, I don't see him ascending before the end of the season. I think he's really talented. I just am not anticipating that happening.
Yeah, I went with a 3. So just slightly above you, but I just Things would have to go awry, I think, for him to end up in the starting lineup. Not that they can't, but I don't see him like in the middle of the season, like someone's playing fine, but he's just so good that they have to put him in the lineup. It would have to be injury related or performance related, where someone is playing so poorly that they feel like they have to go to different options. And maybe it could be the Joe Alt story all over again, but I don't necessarily. I think that'd be a hard thing to sort of bet on. So I'm not gonna put it too high of a number on that. Next one is Riley Leonard is in New York for the Heisman ceremony.
You know, he there's a pathway for that to happen. And if Notre Dame was a surprise team and really surprising to the 247 Sports national writer who didn't even have him in the top 30, I put it two just because I think that Notre Dame's defense is going to be so good that their offense isn't going to produce pyrotechnical numbers. You know, there's going to be people with better numbers than him, even if he plays really well. So I'm not sure that he would be the face of Notre Dame getting to the playoff and winning a playoff game. I think that would be somebody on the defense.
Yeah, but Ian Book still got people to vote for him, and I think
He did.
so. I put a four. I don't think it's like very likely, but I think if Notre Dame has that kind of season and he is a big part of the offensive success, it's hard to sort of completely rule out a Notre Dame quarterback getting that kind of hype around him. And there also aren't, at least going into the season, a ton of like big name quarterbacks. Like if you look at the mock drafts for next year, there's only a handful of people, and some people think Riley Leonard is among them that could eventually be a first round pick next year. So if he plays to that level, I think it's that certainly would make it within the realm of possibility if Notre Dame has a successful season as well. So that's why I put a four. Not a huge number, but a bit higher than you.
My number will probably change in August once he is named the starter and once we do get to see him. There's just a lot of variables there that knocked it down for me.
All right. Next one is Micah Gilbert cracks the top six sometime during the season.
I put an eight
Same.
because I think he's there now. But Bo Collins gets added into the, so does Logan Saldate, although they're not competing for playing time. But Bo Collins is the person that could knock him back. But, you know, when I asked Marcus Freeman about him in one of the press conferences late in spring, he said, you know, we're counting on him helping us this year. So he was so consistent during spring practice. That's why I put him in high probability of being in the top six.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what exactly that means to be in the top six. Like, do we just talking like if he's the top six in receivers and snaps in a game? I think if it's as little, if the bar is that low, I would almost put a 10 on it. Like, I think at least for one of the games, he's going to be among the top six receivers and snaps. So I don't know exactly how to
Well,
judge
I think
this.
she means like Mike Brown talked, and maybe it was
Well, the
Marcus that
rotation
said
would be among the snaps, right? I mean, that would
it.
be reflective of that, unless obviously the snaps get
Okay, but when you
impacted.
start naming those guys, it gets dicey once you get past. So it's
Yeah, but I'm not
the
saying, I'm just saying for a game. Like, I'm not gonna say, I'm not, I wouldn't even predict you necessarily be
Okay.
there for the whole season. She said sometime during the season.
Oh,
So
I see. I
I'm
gotcha.
assuming like in a game, he could certainly be among the top six
I
receivers.
gotcha. I gotcha. Okay.
I don't think that necessarily he would
I
necessarily
read it differently.
stay in the top six in the or get into the top
I
six
thought
and
she
stay there.
meant that he gets into the
Gets theirs and
rotation and
stays.
stays in the
Yeah.
rotation.
Yeah. So my number would be lower if that's what we're referring to. Although we both have the same number in terms of eight. So all right. Next one. Defense has greater than 35 sacks.
You know, Notre Dame hasn't been over that 35 number that much. They have in some of the recent years. They've been at 38 and 41. Not last year. I think they were at 31. They don't get there very often. However, I think there are so many things that contribute to them being able to get sacks, including having a really good defensive backfield, that I put that as a seven. I think that, 35 is a big number, but I think they have the players to get the sacks, and I think they have the corners who can stay on the receivers and allow Notre Dame to do some creative things with their front seven and even get those sacks with their front four.
Yeah, I went with a seven as well. Notre Dame has done that in two of the past three seasons, though the season that didn't do it last year is when Notre Dame didn't have someone like Isaiah Foskey chasing a quarterback. So, and I don't necessarily know that Notre Dame has an Isaiah Foskey type, at least that will play to that level this season. But I do think that they will get there. In addition to what you said about the secondary, I think something that also will play into the defense's advantage is playing with a lead, right? I think Notre Dame is going to be facing teams that are going to have to be trying to come back. And so that just creates more passing downs where the defense can get after the quarterback. All right, next one. Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price both have greater than 800 total yards.
So we're thinking of the Logan Diggs, Audric Estime kind of year. And even Chris Tyree had a bunch of yards that year too. I'd say yes. I'm going to go with yes, and that means a seven for me.
I was going to say, this wasn't a yes or no challenge, Eric.
I'm saying seven. So I think that's fairly probable as long as they both stay healthy. I think they are going to be very even in terms of opportunities and production.
Yeah, I would go with the eight. I think it's very, very probable that this happens. Estime and Diggs in 2021 both did that. Or I guess, do I have the right year? No, 2022. Both had at least 800 rushing yards alone. So total yards, I think, especially when you talk about, I think both of these guys are probably pretty good pass catchers. But obviously Jeremiah Love has been someone that they're talking about using at receiver at times. So I think they'll both have plenty of opportunities to surpass 800 total yards for them. All right. We got two more from Marie. Two receivers have greater than 700 yards.
Well, nobody had it last year. And I think Mitchell Evans might have, or probably would have, had he played an entire season, played 13 games instead of eight. And you think about Mitchell Evans, you think about there's receivers on this team that are capable of it. But again, I think it's going to be so spread out that I'm not sure if you're going to get one person over 700. So I'm giving that a one.
All right. I went with a four, which is higher, but I don't love Notre Dame's odds of doing that. I was looking back to the last time that happened in terms of wide receivers. I excluded tight ends because there were a number of times where a tight end had over 800 and or over 700 and a receiver had 700 as well. But the last time two receivers had that, do you want to guess, Eric? Do you want to guess when the last time that happened?
Golden Tate and Michael Floyd?
It was TJ Jones and DeVaris Daniels in 2013. Okay. So quite a long time ago, and I don't know that that would have been the duo that I would have picked either. It was a little bit surprising that that was the one that came up with, but I was wanted to see how far back I could go until I found that, and that I believe I did that right, although I did it a bit quickly. So I don't think there's a really great chance of that happening, even though I do think the passing game will be improved. But that's a lot of passing receiving yards for two guys to both get, and I think I don't know that there's two guys that'll be that much better than the rest of Notre Dame's receivers. I think there could be a chance that maybe one gets up there, and then if that second one is someone, maybe it would be Mitchell Evans. Although if he misses some time to start the year, maybe that's harder for him to get to as well. All right, last one from Marie is at least two punt returns for a touchdown.
Jordan Faison, I think, is the favorite to be the punt returner. He didn't, other than just kind of watching everybody else catch punts in the spring, he didn't really do that on the days we were in there.
Yeah.
And the people that they had lined up to do it on the days we were in there was a pretty impressive group. So I think they're going to have a dynamic punt returner as opposed to somebody that does a lot of fair catches. And if it's Faison, I like it, but punting and punt returns in this day and age are so difficult to return one for a touchdown and to get two of them. So I put it as a two. So I think it's possible, but I think it's improbable.
We had a lot of, we were very similar in most of our numbers, and we even had a handful that we had the same. I had a two as well here. It doesn't happen that often across the country. Only six teams did it last year. The last time Notre Dame did it was in 2020. I don't think the probability is that high, so that's why I put it at a two, even though I do think that Notre Dame could have a pretty good punt return unit if Jordan Faison's the one back there, or maybe someone else. I thought Jaden Greathouse looked good at times in some of the practices we saw, but I would be a little bit surprised if they leaned on him to do that over Faison. All right, next is from Nathan Reynolds at Enforcers 2117. Do you think the reason why Notre Dame players didn't jump in the portal is because they are waiting until they graduate in the next few months and then they can get in the portal as a grad transfer?
1,000 times no, for a couple reasons. One is the portal rules changed this year for grad transfers to where there was a deadline. Their deadline was a day after the undergrad, so they could go in as of May 1st. Now, somebody at Notre Dame or somewhere else could challenge it legally and say, well, I'm just going to make my own rules because that's the way they used to be. And I guess they could take the NCAA to court and see if they could be on the winning streak of the NCAA not doing well in court. But that's not how the rules are. And even then, In the old rules, they would have jumped in the portal. I mean, they could have jumped in the portal whenever. They don't have to have their degree to do that.
Right.
They can do it knowing that they're going to get their degree at a certain time. So, no, I don't think that was the reason that so many of the potential grads stayed at Notre Dame.
Yeah. And if we're talking about graduate transfers that would like graduate in August, there's not many undergrads that finish in the summer. So I the list of those guys would have to be very short. I don't know what that list would be or could be, but I don't think there's that many people that would fit that bill. So I don't think that that played a significant role. Now, if we're talking about guys that may graduate next December or next spring, then yes, of course, that it probably played a role in those guys deciding to stay because they do want to get their degree. But I don't think it's someone that it was impacted by, like, hey, I still need one more summer session to graduate. Let me not get in the transfer portal, because I'm not exactly sure how the grad transfer portal thing works. Cause like Clarence Lewis got in, but he wasn't a graduate yet. I don't think he was graduating till May. I think it's like
you are projecting that you're going to be a graduate. So if
someone were in that, like, I don't know what the window is. Like, if they were going to say, hey, I'll graduate in August, I think they could have gone in now. And I don't know why they would have waited, I guess.
Right.
Because that wouldn't have helped them in any way, to my understanding. So I don't think this is the case at all. All right, next question. A little bit of a long one here. I took some time to think about, from Charles W. Wolf. Just a parlor game. How many of the projected 2024 starters would have started on the 2012 team?
I went through player by player and I came up with 5 on offense and 6 on defense for a total of 11. So half of them. That surprised me. I thought there would be more 2024 starters, where the 2024 team takes a little bit of a beating as on the offensive line.
Yeah, I had 9. So I had fewer than you in terms of 2024 starters. And these were my 9: Ashton Craig, Billy Shrouth, Riley Leonard, Jaden Greathouse. And I sort of tried to do it position by position. I didn't say, like, well, let me move, Pat Coogan to right guard or whatever. And it was a little harder on defense because they play a different defense in terms of 4-3 versus 3-4 with a nickel back too. And so my defensive guys were RJ Oben, Jack Kaiser, Jordan Clark, Benjamin Morrison, and Xavier Watts. I could run
through that. Okay, I definitely had some different ones there.
My 2012 stars, just to give people an idea of who we're comparing them to, I have Zach Martin. Obviously, he would start. Chris Watt would start. I had Christian Lombard still as the starting right tackle. I went with Theo Riddick as the starting running back. TJ Jones is a starting receiver. Tyler Eifert, obviously, is a starting tight end. Tavares Daniels is a starting receiver. I think the two on offense that I would have accepted probably good arguments were, or maybe 3, would have been, I think you could argue between Braxton Cave and Ashton Craig. You could argue between Theo Riddick and Jeremiah Love. And I think you could also argue that other wide receiver position. Defensively, Capron Lewis Moore, Lewis Nix, Stefanto, you're taking that whole defensive line. I think even though Howard Cross and Riley Mills are very good, I don't know that I would take those guys over the 2012 defensive line. Obviously, Manti Te'o would start. And I kept Mathias Farley and Bennett Jackson in the secondary.
Okay, so I went with – so should I do the 2024 guys first and then the 2012s? Is that
– Sure. Yeah, I think
okay,
so.
Okay, so 2024, I went with either Great House or Faison over Toma. Sorry, Robbie. He's been on our podcast. I went with Billy Shrouth over Mike Golic Jr., another podcast guest. I'm sure another podcast guest. I went with Riley Leonard over Everett Golson. Right. I went with Jeremiah Love over Riddick. And I went with Riley Leonard. Did I say that?
You did say
I
that.
I went with Jaden Thomas over John Goodman, who Notre Dame listed as the starter. I know Davaris Daniels played a lot. For whatever reason, in the old supplement, Goodman had more starts. But even though I think Davaris had problems like going to class and stuff, but he had better stats than Goodman. That's why I went with Jaden Thomas there.
Yeah.
On defense, I went with Howard Cross over Lewis Nix, and that kills me because Lewis Nix is my all-time favorite guy. But I thought Cross earned it by being a second team All-American. Lewis kind of got screwed out of All-American status in 2012, and then didn't play to that level in 2013. I went with Kaiser over Dan Fox. I went with Snead over Danny Spond, although Danny Spond was really good. I'm just projecting Snead being that good this year. At cornerback, Ben Morrison over Bennett Jackson, or I'm sorry, over Kavari Russell. I went with Christian Gray over Bennett Jackson, and I went with Watts over Farley. I did now the 2012 guys. I stuck with Zeke Mata at one of the safeties, Manti Te'o at linebacker. I moved Chembo down to defensive end. To what I made a defensive tackle and Capron Lewis Moore and kept those guys all as starters. I had Tyler Eifert at tight end, Christian Lombard at right tackle, Zach Martin at left tackle, Chris Watt at left guard. I actually went with Braxton Cabe over Ashton Craig.
Mm-hmm.
And I went with TJ Jones at whoever's going to be the field receiver.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it was an interesting exercise. I mean, it's hard because you know what happened in 2012. So you have like the retrospective of what those guys did, and we're projecting what the 2024 guys will do, especially for some of the guys that don't have like as long of a track record that we're projecting for, especially like someone like Rod Hurd. How do we have any idea how he would stack up against one of the safeties from that season? I thought it was an interesting exercise. I was looking things up while you were. It's weird that John Goodman was listed. I just looked up the stats for the season, and if you look at participation, Goodman started one game, and played in 10. Daniels actually started fewer than who was the other person. This is probably not a good exercise or good radio. Chris Brown started four games. Daniels already only started three, but Brown had way fewer stats and impacted the game less. So I went with Daniels ahead of Brown when I was making my decisions of who to consider the starter. All right. Next one is from at HC_92. Can you envision a scenario where both CJ Carr and Deuce Knight are first round picks and neither plays college football anywhere but Notre Dame?
I can envision a path. I don't think it's likely, but I can envision a path where that happens. And again, Notre Dame has had so few first-round draft choices at quarterback. Brady Quinn is the last one. But this is a different era. Notre Dame is recruiting really well at that position, and these are
It's like the 40s all over again.
What's that?
So it's like the 40s all over again.
Yeah, it's like the 40s all
over. I think that was the last time they had two first rounders on the same team at quarterback.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, CJ and Deuce, but I don't think it's likely just based on how the portal is, you know, and it's CJ could come out after his junior year and that would give Deuce some time. But is Deuce really want to be a 5-year guy? I don't know that that exists anymore in college football as a quarterback that's that highly thought of.
Well, I don't, he wouldn't have to be a five. No, he could be a 4-year guy.
Yeah.
If, the path would be, in my opinion, in terms of making this possible, would be CJ Carr starts in 2025 and 2026.
Yeah.
And starts his 2 years and then leaves as a junior. And then Deuce Knight starts in 2027 as a junior and then 2028. Because I doubt he would be able to start just 1 year and become an NFL first round pick. So he would probably need to start 2 years. So that would be the outcome. And like, that's a very narrow path, right? Like you're threading the needle to make sure that happens. So it's hard to envision that. I mean, I could come up with a scenario, but it's hard to like feel very confident that, that's what's going to happen. So those guys definitely have that level of talent and could reach that potential. But how does that work out in terms of all those guys playing and staying? The odds of that happening, I have to imagine, are pretty slim. All right, our last one is from ND Football Discord at NDF underscore Discord. Can we get your post-spring position group rankings, offense and defense combined?
So we're putting these in order. Shakiest, right?
Yeah.
We're not giving them numbers or grades.
No. Just order. I mean, I numbered them 1 to 10, but yeah, that. But yeah, just
okay. Well, I only is special teams one of yours, or did you split up the defensive line?
I split up the defensive line. I didn't include special teams because you just said offense and defense combined.
Okay, I put the defensive line as one, so I'm messing this up. So I'm going to go with
D-line. No, I mean, it's not that big of a difference. I don't think.
I'll go with D-line first, cornerback second, linebackers third, running backs fourth, quarterbacks fifth. I can't believe I have quarterbacks fifth. Tight ends sixth, safety seventh, wide receivers eighth, offensive line ninth. I don't feel good about a lot of those. And if safeties is seventh, that's a pretty darn good team. And wide receivers eighth, that's a pretty darn good team. I mean, it's to me, 1 and 9 are pretty, 1, 2, and 9 are easy. The rest of them are a little bit difficult for me.
Well, yeah, we had some disagreement at the top. Maybe I would consider D-line 1 if I combined them. I split them, so I had them at 3 with defensive tackles and 5 with defensive ends. I had cornerbacks as number 1, running backs as number 2. The thing we disagreed the most on, I think, was linebackers. I had that at 8 out of 10 for me. Not that I think those are bad. I think
I'm projecting a lot. You know, I think they're going to be really good.
I tried to think of it as like, okay, how many guys in this position group do I like really trust? So like cornerback, I think there's 3, 4 if you include Jordan Clark. I think there's probably 3 running backs you would trust. Defensive tackles, 3 or 4. Quarterbacks, I think it's hard to trust a lot of quarterbacks. And then obviously I think you weigh them in towards like, well, they have a really great player at the top of the depth chart there. So I had quarterback 4, defensive end 5, tight end at 6, 7, safety. I think I could switch those two, but I like the depth at tight end better. 8 linebacker, and then the bottom two to me were wide receiver and offensive line. I think that was probably the thing I feel the most adamant about, that those are the two at the bottom of the list that have the most approved going into the season. All right. That is it for today's episode of the Inside Indy Sports Podcast. If you don't already, you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and other popular podcast platforms. If you like what you hear, give us a star rating, leave a review, and share our podcast feed with someone who wants to improve their 3-point shot like Eric. As I mentioned earlier, we're offering a 30-day free trial to our podcast listeners who want to try out a subscription to InsideIndySports.com. So please take advantage of that with code NDPOD. That's NDPOD. We'll continue to stay in this weekly mode with the podcast and Keeping Football Never Sleeps on Mondays as well. Until then, stick with InsideIndySports.com for all your Notre Dame coverage needs.